Welcome to the Plant Witch Podcast, where we enter together into the web of life in all of its many seen and unseen dimensions. I'm Erin Schrader, and it is my honor to hold this portal to the other world. Let's enter, shall we?
It is a cool and rainy spring day here in South Central Pennsylvania. I've been working in the gardens most of the day. Still only minimal gardening to do because it's pretty cold. We don't do much soil disturbance here until the temperature is regularly, even at night, above 50 degrees, because a lot of our insects hibernate in the leaf litter and in the top few layers of soil. I do make some exceptions to that. We have a really, really prolific thistle species here called Canada thistle that finds the soil here in the grove to be absolutely perfect for its replication. And I start at it right away, and I stay on top of it all year long. And so I started already this morning uprooting some thistle seedlings. And in the process, I uprooted a cocoon, a moth cocoon, most likely. So I had to quickly rebury the wiggly little cocoon and give my apologies. So much of life is that way. Balancing harm with necessity. We have brown rot on our peach trees here. And also leaf curl. And they're both fungus that affects the fruit and leaves of the peach. The fruit's still edible. It just very quickly rots on the tree. Often even before it's fully ripe. So it is, you know, a troublesome fungus for sure. I've been researching ways to combat it for a few years now. And a local orchard grower friend of mine said, "Erin, you're just going to have to spray it with copper sulfate. Just make peace with it. It's almost impossible to get rid of. That's really the only thing you can do." So I made peace with it, and I bought copper sulfate, which can technically be used in organic orchards, from what I read. So that made me feel a little bit better about applying what, you know, was just a mineral, a metal. But then I read on the bottle to keep pets and children away from the area for at least 12 hours after application, and how dangerous it was to have it inhaled or accidentally applied to your skin. And I just couldn't do it because I knew I couldn't keep the birds out of the tree for 12 hours, and I couldn't keep the insects out of the tree that the birds would eat for 12 hours. And I knew that copper sulfate would get into the groundwater, which our well is here on this land. And so I just couldn't bring myself to do it. And interestingly, the next day, the peach blossoms were covered in honeybees. Just a swarm, not a literal swarm, but a whole lot of honeybees all over the peach blossoms, who would have been, you know, poisoned probably by that copper sulfate. And then taken back to their apiaries, which are probably, you know, kept by local people. So would that have gotten into the honey? You know, I don't know. But again, balancing harm with necessity. Is it a necessity for me to treat our peach tree for brown rot? I don't think it is at this point. We aren't living off of the trees, the peach trees. We'd get plenty of fruit off for our personal enjoyment before it rots. The animals get plenty of fruit while it's turning, the squirrels and the jays and so many of the birds. And raccoons, they love the fruit, even when it's got a little rotten spot on it. So for this year, I'm going to just leave it be. I also bought an organic orchard book that I'll be reading to try to get more information. But it's such a balancing act. You know, if you've been following along here at the podcast, you know about my balancing act with the bittersweet vine and how I was too slow to act in that situation, which brought down a cedar tree and broke a hemlock in half. So my stance on vining plants has radically shifted. And I've already been out several times this spring and over the winter, severing vines, grape and honeysuckle and bittersweet. Next on my list is uprooting bush honeysuckle and privet. They are two really, really thick growing understory plants that are not native to this area and choke out any native plants that may still be here. And they're so easily dispersed because they're both fruit bearing. Both honeysuckle and privet, also autumn olive and bittersweet. They're all fruit bearing, so the birds are just prolific dispersal agents. And the next thing you know, the whole forest is full of these low growing, dense understory plants. So it's, I look out on this land that I love so much, and what I see is the struggle for this land to find balance. And a major shift in me from when I was young until now, and I think a shift that's slowly happening throughout, all the people of my generation anyway, and, older generations, is this idea that nature is sort of infinite and infinitely resilient, and we can do anything to nature and she'll be fine. She'll course correct it somehow. She'll transmute it into something good. She'll bounce right back. And what we're all starting to see now, I think, is that she can't do it alone anymore. That we have created such imbalance that we are responsible now for correcting that imbalance. So my part in that is going out into this forest and cutting back the vines and digging up the privet and digging up the bush honeysuckle, restoring native species, just to give her a chance, you know. If I just let this land alone, and don't do anything, just let nature be nature, the vining species will just tear the trees down, which is what I see everywhere I go here in Pennsylvania. Trees broken in half, trees bent over by vining species. It's really heartbreaking. Once you see it everywhere. And boy, do I see it everywhere. This change in perspective reminds me of something we talked about in therapy this morning. As I've changed my perspective about my role in relationships, the way I see people has radically changed. And I think this is so important to look back over our lives and see the way that our worldview has shifted, our perspective has shifted. It really helps us see how we've grown individually and how we're growing together collectively. It can feel like we're stuck or stagnant or nothing's ever changing or nothing will ever get better. But then when we take time to really look and see how far we've come, it can be really empowering, emboldening, liberating, encouraging. And I encourage you to do that in your own life too. For me, most of my life, I believed that my job was to take care of everyone, to fix their problems, to offer solutions, to use my life force to make something easier or better. That felt to me like service, like humility, like being a good person. It was more like exploiting myself. Honestly, I was using myself as a tool, and everywhere I looked, I was looking for a place to apply that tool. It reminds me of a conference, a healthcare conference I was at a decade or more ago now, where a surgeon had suggested that there should be a cardiovascular specialty hospital built in a community. And there was no evidence to support that that community was particularly in need of a specialist cardiovascular hospital. But he succeeded and he built his cardiovascular hospital, and it was always full, and sometimes with a wait list, even though prior to his creating that specialty center, the need was not apparent. So his ability to create the need to fulfill his vision by educating other professionals about referring to him for cardiovascular issues, about early intervention, about maybe being more aggressive in treating cardiovascular disease than might have been warranted or even considered appropriate before the hospital existed. There's a lot of potential answers to that question or potential contributors to his success where it didn't look like he would be successful. But I think it's the same with anything we do. That old Field of Dreams quote, build it and they will come. Whatever we expect to see, we will see. Whatever we need to fulfill our desire, mission, we'll find it. So when we decide that our work in the world is something that is not actually in alignment with what we're here to do, we will still find a lot of people in need of what we've decided is our work to do, even if they may not really be in need of it, and even if it may not really be our work to do. And that is certainly what was going on for me in my life. I decided it was my job to fix people, to be their rescuer, and I found a lot of people who needed fixed, and they believed they needed my help, and I believed they needed my help. And I believed that because there were so many people who needed help and I was helping them, that this was what I was made to do. I don't know if you can hear the crows. There are quite a few of them back there making their presence known. I've talked about the Morrigan here before. Her presence has been a major part of my ability to shift out of that role-based identity as a fixer, saver, savior, martyr, and into a more sovereign identity, which is what I'm talking about now. So I really bow to her presence here in the form of the crows and acknowledge the support I've received both from her directly through the messages of the crows and through her priestesses. I have several of the Morrigan's priestesses in my life who have been integral parts of this massively healing time for me. And I'm so grateful to all of them too. So as I've shifted away from fixing, martyring, saving, and I've settled into this sovereignty, this sense of I'm good, I am worthy, I am enough as I am, without having to prove it by exploiting myself, without having to barter for safety or belonging, but totally shifting my expectations around belonging. A miracle has happened. The people around me have transformed into wildly competent, capable, resourceful, sufficient, and sovereign people. And so my therapist, Athena, this morning asked me, "Do you think everyone around you has really changed so much during your healing journey? Or can you just see them clearly now?" And of course, I don't know the answer to that question, but it humbles me to admit that I think they were probably all resourceful, competent, skilled, and capable all along. And maybe they didn't even want my help or my meddling or my insinuating that they couldn't handle it themselves as often as I did. I know there were times when my help was truly needed, welcome, supportive. And I know there will be times again where whatever I have to offer is truly helpful. And there are plenty of times where all someone needs from me is just to listen, just to validate their experience, just to celebrate their courage, because they are capable, competent, and there are times, just like this forest, where they can't do it themselves, just like there are times I can't do it myself. There are bush honeysuckle growing in me that I can't get to on my own. And so that's where people like Athena and the priestesses of the Morrigan and my dearest, closest friends and my husband come in with their shovels and their machetes and their pruning shears, and they help me clear the area because I cannot do it myself. Or when I was freshly postpartum with my son, with lots of birth trauma and real trauma, physical trauma, I could not do it myself. People brought me soup and drove my daughter places and sat with Torrin so I could sleep and take a shower. That's my son. And I could not have done that myself. So there is this sweet spot of discernment as we find our way in relationship, whether that's with the forest or with our friends or neighbors or with our family. Where are the places where we need to show up with a casserole or a shovel? And where are the places where we just need to listen, bear witness? And if we don't know, we should ask. I was having a little bit of a tantrum the other day, and my husband said, "Do you want me to tell you what I see right now, or do you want me to just listen?" Sometimes we don't need to hear the truth in that moment, especially if it's a hurtful one or a difficult one to hear. And that's okay. We can wait until we're more calm, there's more space, and then we can get help from our friends with the casserole or the shovel or the clear-eyed truth. We are just a few days away from some pretty major astrological events. The solar eclipse, conjunct Chiron, Mercury retrograde is also happening in the sign of Aries. We have the Jupiter and Uranus conjunction in Taurus. Sedna moving into Gemini. And I believe Saturn and Mars are in Pisces, near conjunct as well, but I can't remember for sure. But in total, you know, it's a lot of force applied for the transformation of wounds into a new sense of self. And so this process I just described of changing my identity from a tool to be used to fix other people to a sovereign being who is able to choose how she wants to show up and honors the sovereignty of others and my own by asking, you know, how to help, not assuming I know. That is a major healing of the identity. And I'm not done. There's plenty more about my identity that needs healing for sure. But I share it as an example of the kind of environment we are in right now, astrologically and collectively, just as a people. Who is it that we have been most or all of our lives that we just are not anymore, or that it has hurt us to try to be that person, or it has hurt us to try to act in that way? And not only has it hurt us, but maybe it's impacted how we see other people in a way that's hurt them unintentionally. To get a clearer idea of where this might be active in your own life, check out your astrological chart. Specifically, what do you have going on in the house of Aries, and where is your Chiron? If you don't know how to read your chart, or you're not sure where to look for this, or if this is all really confusing to you, first of all, I would suggest, if you have the resources, make a relationship with a good astrologer who can be your touchstone and sort of your teacher as you explore this world of astrology. My main teacher has been Petra Tauchert. Her website will be linked in the show notes. There's also a sort of growing astrologer named Erin Z, who has a Substack called Star Gardener, and I find her writing to be extremely illuminating. And she's been very responsive to my questions as I've been following her, as has Petra, for years. Sometimes just, you know, off the cuff, where I just send a question and they're quick to answer, and then I will also book with them to pay them for their time. And you can also use apps like The Pattern or CoStar, websites like astro.com or AstroSeek to help you start to understand the language of the stars and the planets more intimately. But this energy will be affecting you whether you understand the astrology or not, whether you know what house it's in, whether you know where your Chiron is. It's nice to have that information to work with it and to get some clarity, but it's definitely not necessary. You're going to feel this happening one way or another. And especially if you notice people are rubbing you the wrong way, or you feel a particular kind of friction in a relationship, that is a place where this energy is being applied right now. So I would suggest not externalizing those feelings. Don't pick a fight. Don't, you know, offer that person that nugget of judgment right now. Take it as a piece of information about the depths of your own wounds, your own psyche. What is trying to get your attention right now? What is the value system underneath that rub, underneath that feeling that wants to be examined? For a long time, I felt this sense of desperate compulsion to help a certain kind of person that I was actually judging pretty harshly. And I thought I had to help them because there was something wrong with the way that they were. And that turned out to be my problem, not theirs. So if there's a certain person in your life or a certain kind of person that you feel really compelled to argue with or change or show them their weakness or their problem, I would have a really close look at how that might actually be coming from something inside yourself. And again, if this is a place where the forest is too dense and you can't see on your own, ask someone to help. To come in with their pruning shears, a therapist, a spiritual director, a pastor, a priestess, a trusted friend. Read a book like No Bad Parts or The Blind Spot Effect. There are so, so, so many resources available to us in this information age, and I have a feeling that's going to be bursting even more wide open in the coming years. So to wrap up today, I just want to leave you with that question. Where is there a part of you that you just are not that person anymore. An identity, a role, a certain way of behaving. And you know it doesn't feel good or right. It leaves you feeling depleted or resentful, or you feel resistance when it's happening, but you feel like you have to. And you don't have to make any decisions about that right now. In fact, we probably shouldn't, because of Mercury being retrograde. Like, let's not quit our jobs or change our majors or anything like that. But really just take some time to get clear. Journal, talk to friends, cast some runes, pull a tarot card, scry in the bathtub water. Whatever your go-to tools for clarity are, to help us see how we've outgrown these identity structures. And if we let them fall away and shift into a new way of being, what could become possible? What would that free us up for? And with that freed up energy, what would we want to do with it? How would we want to move differently in the world? I don't know, but I think it's time for us to have the audacity to imagine that we can do that, that we can leave old selves behind personally and collectively and just do something different. Like, imagine if we all woke up tomorrow morning and said, you know, we all live on the same earth. Why aren't we just working together to protect it, to protect the children, to protect the plants, to protect the water, to get it cleaned up? Like, why are we letting all of these special interests divide us when we all know we want the same thing? We could just leave all of those micro identities behind and just move forward together. I really believe those kinds of shifts, those kinds of radical, massive shifts are possible. And they start individually and they ripple out into big collective changes. So if I can help you with any of this, don't hesitate to reach out through email or in any of my socials. I'll help as best I can. But blessings on your eclipse. Stay safe. And let what's old fall away and stay behind to fertilize the new ground of what we're becoming together. If you would like to support the podcast, you can find a link at plantwitchpodcast.com, or you can go directly to Patreon at patreon.com/therebelherbalist. We welcome your financial support, and we also welcome your participation in this vibrant community of humans who are working together to rejoin the web of life. The audio that you hear for the intro and outro of this podcast is the song Vikings by Alan Gray. Thank you for joining me for the Plant Witch Podcast. I'm your host, Erin Schrader. I'm an herbalist, a mother, a holistic nurse, and a practitioner of the ancient ways. Thank you for joining me, and it's time to come back to life.